Right, so I'm here today chatting to my good friend and colleague James Quatermain about social media influencers kind of generally, and I think it's probably fair to say someone in particular is going to come up as part of that conversation. And we're recording this today for a social sort of online safety campaign, sorry, for Essex. So as I said, James Quatermain is a friend and colleague of mine, and we've worked together for God, it's a long time now, James, isn't it?
It has been, eh?
Yeah. And James does quite a lot of work with us in Oxfordshire, working with children and young people in secondary schools about a range of issues. So, do you want to add anything to that, James? Your youth work background as well?
Yeah, I guess that would be the only thing to add, I guess, is just that, yeah, other than doing these sort of school sessions, I'm by trade, I guess I'm a youth worker, and particularly a detached youth worker. So I'm kind of used to just going out and about catching young people on their turf rather than sort of having young people come to me, such so. So that's sort of my background, essentially.
And yeah, and we've talked about this ourselves, haven't we? The sort of issues that we're here to chat about today. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, James, and say this is probably coming up in your work as well. Would that be a fair comment?
Well, over the years, I have to say, perhaps because of my own upbringings and my own experiences as a young person, but I am particularly interested and drawn to working with concepts around masculinity and sort of like it could, because it has been so prevalent within my sort of professional and personal lives.
And I think that touches on a bit of the issues that we're going to look at today, because I think we'll get there, won't we, in terms of why is he appealing to young males? But that does feel like there is something going on there around kind of that young adolescent male audience. And I think, like you say, James, those concepts around masculinity, et cetera.
I mean, I used to work in London, and particularly, there was the big narrative was, sort of gangs and stuff, and all the sort of gang violence or knife crime even. And for me, it was always kind of baffling how we would use these terms but not really identify like the perpetrators and the victims of the main perpetrators and victims of these crimes were young men. And I just felt like it was kind of nuts that we weren't naming it as such, but rather making it more maybe about sort of other issues. And I always thought it's, I mean, we're never going to get to the root of the problem if we don't sort of aren't willing to sort of go beneath the surface a little bit.
I think that's a good place to start about kind of, yeah. I mean, let's have a chat about Andrew Tate then, because I guess what you said there, James, is pretty insightful, because at the end of the day, he has reached out to that audience, hasn't he? So, for those maybe who are listening to this podcast and don't maybe know who he is, I mean, how would you summarize him, James, in a broad brushstrokes?
From a personal professional perspective,
At this stage.
well, I mean, in all honesty, I this person was pretty much completely off my radar. I it's not my He doesn't pop up in my algorithms or my social media feeds. However, I did start hearing his name circulating, and so I got interested. I think to understand, to form an opinion on anything, I think you have to understand the other side of the argument, if that
A
makes
hundred
sense.
percent, and I think that is something we'll come on to later, because I think maybe that is part of the problem here. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
We're sort of looking at it as a completely one-dimensional issue, and I'm not sure it is. But yeah, go
Because if
on.
you didn't know the term intersectionality, this is definitely what we're doing. But so I guess how I see Andrew Tate is somebody who represents a very sort of traditional, and I guess perhaps if you'd like to say the ideal, but that's I'm speaking loosely and sort of
I know
loosely,
what
if
you
you
mean,
like. The ideal sense of masculinity, what it means to be a man, that sort of, the survival of the fittest kind of narrative, which I personally don't agree with, but I think he represents a particular type of masculinity that appeals. Well, I think he basically, if we only have to look back over history to see that there is a particular type of genders that have been, what's the word, sort of favored or sort of popularized. If you look at fashion and whatnot, the types of body shapes, we all aware of this sort of debate. I think it's just, again, not really spoken about so much. But yeah, I think Andrew Tate represents a type of man that a lot of perhaps people think they should be, or is represents some kind of ideal. I don't know.
Like that sort of hyper masculinity, isn't it? And
I think that's a much better word than toxic masculinity.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And a young person described him to me recently as like, he's living like a real world hip hop video, was kind of what they said to me. And I kind of felt, actually, you can kind of see where that appeal would come from for some young people if that was the reality. Do you see what I mean?
And it definitely is that kind of that cultural appeal, I think, of that kind of sort of hip hop gangster kind of, what is it they always say, free my G or something like this?
Isn't that what they call him?
Yeah, so you know, he's definitely appealing to that sort of hyper masculinity kind of sort of they are, again, like there's those patterns, I believe, like if you look at a lot of the pattern of male what he particularly appeals to is that violence, I guess, that's glamorized through a lot of this hip-hop.
And he's got that ex, yeah, so he's got that ex kind of career in martial arts, hasn't he? Which, yeah, I think is very appealing to young people. I mean, you think how popular MMA is and stuff like that.
Absolutely. He's got
the money and the kind of outward signs of that are very prevalent in his videos. And at the end of the day, I think what we have to kind of come back to, and I do keep coming back to this myself, is he's effectively monetized disaffected young males, hasn't he? That's his business model. You know, he's found a niche, I think, and I think he's exploited it quite effectively.
I totally agree. And like, personally, I kind of feel like we're seeing a big shift in society and values, and even just language. And I think a lot of we all talk about this, hear this concept of privilege and like male privilege, but I hear this in the daily conversations at work where lots of people can't understand how that applies to themselves because they don't feel privileged, and that's very understandable in a lot of cases. But I think where we've seen this shift and we've seen some changes, I think for a lot of folks that have sort of been benefiting from certain structures or in like sort of values that have been in place, this is now, I think, masculinity in its dominant form is kind of in crisis. And I think a lot of this is, the Andrew Tate is a reassuring voice to people who are now feeling kind of unsure or uncertain about what it means to be a man. Is it okay to be less aggressive and less violent? Because actually, that's what some people are suggesting now, but actually that's not what I've been grown up to. That's not what I've been told as I've been growing up, you know? And I think for a lot of these young men growing up in these sort of coming from deprived backgrounds, violence is just the norm. So to go against, to now say that that's not how it should be done, I think it's understandable that it's being met with some resistance.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that segues nicely onto kind of why is he appealing? So let's have a think about that. And I think that's a great intro to that, James. I think one of the problems here that I've encountered talking to young people about it is it's not, like we said earlier, it's not one dimensional what he's offering, because the content is, yes, misogyny is a part of that. And I think there are some incredibly objectionable views on women that are very well known, but he's also selling that lifestyle that we talked about is interspersed with kind of self-help advice that, if we're being brutally honest, a lot of people probably would agree with if they didn't know he said it. Does that make sense?
I mean, it's the whole classic genius, you know, evil genius thing, really, isn't it? It's like it may be really damaging and oppressive, but damn, it's pretty damn clever, like how they do it and how he sells it.
And it isn't just one thing that he's actually selling to young people, right? So, you know, some of those bits of self-help advice that I've seen, and I can't remember the exact quotes, but it's stuff like, you know, take responsibility for yourself, to kind of paraphrase, you know, work hard, you know, the only person that can change your life is you. Now, they're sort of messages that I don't think anyone would disagree with.
You know, it's kind of like, I know we're not allowed to, we've got to be careful of our language on here, but you know that expression that, you know, like a turd sandwich? It's yeah. kind of how, like, they kind of sneak in these kind of real vile, aggressive, violent language, and then amongst all these, like you say, these real uplifting and genuinely like empowering potential for some people.
Exactly.
Like,
And I think we have to be honest about that. So it goes back to our kind of, you know, we've got to understand the issue to do something about it. I think where I've had some conversations with young people, I think they can get quite defensive if you just paint it as one thing. Does that make sense? Because they will come back and say, well, no, that isn't just what he's saying. And that is true. You know, so it's not a one dimensional issue. And I think we have to be very honest with young people about that.
And I think it comes back to this, for me anyway, it comes back to that idea of language and how we, and our perceptions of, like, because I feel like we talk about things like in a very black and white terms. And I think for a lot of us, we prefer to accept these simple ideas because it means we don't have to change. We don't have to do anything to make any effort to adopt or help any changes, if that makes sense. I think with this language we use of like boys and girls, they're men and women, they're very restrictive and limiting. And I think we need to sort of reassess how we, the definitions that we apply to this language.
And it's always that classic, isn't it? You know, the problem is complex issues require complex solutions. I mean, you know, so on that, I mean, I think this is the thing. So I think it's pretty obvious why he's appealing to sort of young males. I don't think it's a one dimensional message that he's sending out. And I think that can be difficult when you're trying to address this with young people, because I do think they can get quite defensive about that. But the misogyny and that side of it is clearly massively problematic. So it's about kind of, what do we do about that? And I guess one way, and one thing that I've certainly encountered, I'm not sure that we can tackle him, for want of a better term. I think it's about the views in the wider context. I don't know if you'd agree with that, James.
I personally feel like, I understand, maybe I'm out of touch with the whole Tate debate, but I feel like this man is no one. He is just the face of a much larger problem. I don't think we need to tackle him, because it's this whole for me, it's all about, you know, it's about, like, we see it when people protest, when people take to the streets, when people go on strike, right? The whole world listens. And I feel like it's not this one, the only power this one person has is the power we give to them. And if we start putting our efforts, I think the biggest thing we can do is stop rewarding people. But it's very difficult, like you say, very complex, because of the way, from my view, how society is set up. We reward people for practicing very like violent and toxic characteristics, you know. And I think, like, you know, this idea of, I think, you know, for a group, if there's a group of 10 young men and 8 of them are making a sexist joke, the other 2 think it's not okay, how safe is it for these 2 to speak up? Because actually they're the ones that are going to probably be more risk for disagreeing, if you like.
Well, and that comes into the context of like social risk, because I don't know if you've seen that. I think it was Sarah Jane Blakemore, who's a neuroscientist. She's done some good work on this about what a motivator that is when you're an adolescent. So we can make decisions and be massively motivated by the risk of social exclusion from our peers, if that makes sense, which I think is so true.
Not even just in adolescence.
Adults are not immune to it, are they?
Definitely not. FOMO's real, man.
So this is the problem. You've probably got young people sat there who really don't agree with what he's saying on multiple levels. But if all of your peer group is buying into it, you're probably going to get there yourself, aren't you? I think is a reality.
And you know, Mark, this is really what confuses me often, right? Is that I know in my heart of hearts that 99% of people do not think that like do not agree or support, like, you know, in the sense of this really, we can use some of the extreme examples of his language and things he suggested. You know, we don't, they don't support, they don't think, they don't agree with racism, they don't agree with sexism, they don't agree with like homophobia and transphobia. However, it's very difficult for them to, I forgot what I was going to say.
I know, they don't agree. It's hard. I know exactly what you mean. I think on an individual level, people, and there's lots of polling in various issues that support this, isn't there? That on the whole, people are tolerant and, you know, they don't buy into these sort of world views. But I think there's a difference between sort of an individual level and like a sort of cultural level. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And there's a difference between a conscious level and a subconscious level, I think, as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's it. People wouldn't necessarily share these views in an outward, like external sense, but it doesn't mean that they're not always acting like it on a more subtle and kind of subconscious level.
And that's reminds me of what I was going to say. You know, we would all agree that violence and like, is bad. We all would say we don't want to live in a violent community, a violent society. But yet then we all glorify and reward violence. Mm-hmm. That for me is where we are missing a trick somewhere. Like,
I'm just a bit aware of the time, James. So let's try and pull some of this together, because God, there's a lot to talk about, isn't there? And a lot we've gone through. But I mean, I think let's go back to that bit about him. Okay, because I think if you are working with young people, I'm not sure the best approach is to do a session like on Andrew Tate. Does that make sense? Because I think you're just giving oxygen to
absolutely
the problem. And I think we have to kind of be a bit more subtle. And I think we have to address the views that we're concerned about. Because again, if we try and tackle him, we're painting him in a one-dimensional sense that I don't believe young people see him as. Does that make sense?
I guess, yeah, I think to he's not the real target here. Do you know what I mean? He is like, I think there's no one solution, because we're all different and we all feel and think. But for me, then, if that's the case, it's really about trying to start a dialogue and in a safe space for people to actually share these, like I said right at the beginning, to really understand, to really form an opinion and give it and justify that opinion, we have to be aware of the opposing arguments. And I think if we're coming at this from, well, this is bad, this is like unhealthy, this is violent, which it is, but if we're just doing that, all we're doing is throwing, you know, we're just on the outside of the walls throwing things at the walls, but actually what we need to do is sort of go in through the door and sort of sit down and chat about it. I think so.
I think that's it. I think there's dialogue that's needed, isn't there? Because you can't stop young people accessing this content, right? And you know, at the end of the day, let's just say Tate gets banned from all platforms again, and maybe, you know, I think he's still in custody at the moment, isn't he? But, you know, if he's not there, someone is going to fill this void, because the problem is these views are out there. And they were out there before Tate, and they're going to be out there again since. And the biggest problem is now that he's shown that you can monetize these views and use that controversy to create wealth effectively, someone's going to always fill that vacuum, aren't they? So, yeah. So if it's not him, it's going to be someone else. And I'm sure there are copycat accounts springing up all the time. Now people have seen that. So it's the views we've got to tackle around misogyny, you know, through effective RSHE and effective work in schools, because it does run contrary to what we actually are required to not just teach, but the sort of ethics and morals of the organisation as well, aren't they?
Absolutely. I say it's really difficult, because at the same, like you say, we look historically, we look society, like institutionally, like we can see that there's always been an imbalance here. There's always been the power has never been sort of distributed fairly. But like at the same time, we can't, I don't know, we have to dismantle it rather than just attack it, if that makes sense.
I think you're absolutely right. So I think it is about that high quality sort of RSHE from a young age, isn't it? I think it's about building discrepancy. And what I guess what I mean by that is there are definitely holes in his argument. And, you know, we should exploit that. And I think, you know, that there is a lot we can do around that. Also, the other bit that gets me is I keep coming back to the fact that he is sort of trying to exploit young people, isn't he? Because it's all about signing up for his $50 a month website.
As a youth worker, as a professional who works with, my the exact beyond exploit, he is grooming young people. Yeah. He is a lot. I mean, beyond is the reasons he's in prison. He is a very well, a very professional, very smooth groomer. 100%. He knows all the tricks.
And the problem with that as well, isn't it, James, is like, you know, the bottom line is the algorithm is reinforcing that, because, you know, if that becomes your sort of echo chamber, for want of a better term, and that is just all the content you get from people like Tate and others, well, it's no wonder it gets entrenched, is it?
So it comes back to that. What's the question we're really asking here? Is it like, you know, why is Andrew Tate so popular? Why does he appeal to people? Or is it like, why are so many, like, what is going on for this to be so appealing, or this to be so engaging for such an, and it has to suggest that there is some level of undiagnosed problem that is going on amongst young men.
I think it's very, I don't know about you, and I'm speaking generally, not about young males at the moment. I mean, you know, my children are sort of 18 and 20, so kind of, you know, just out of their teenage years, but not really. And yeah, I would not swap places with them now from a kind of societal, kind of employment, kind of career perspective, if you paid me. Right. I think it is so difficult out there for young people at the moment. And unfortunately, I do think that that is kind of creating disaffection in our young people generally, but maybe more so for young males.
I think that's a really valid point. Like, I think so. Like, again, in my day job at the moment now, one of the biggest hurdles we face on a day is simply trying to support young people to feel motivated to, like, see the point. Like, what's the point of that? That's kind of like, well, I'm not gonna do well at school, so why would I bother at school?
Yeah,
and it's really
COVID stuff. I don't think we've, at a societal and a governmental level, I don't think we've been as honest as we could be about what that impact actually meant, because that period outside of education, I think, had a serious impact on a lot of children and young people.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, I think it's been tough on everyone, but I think particularly it has never really been a tougher time to be a young person.
It's just so difficult to see where those career paths are, aren't there? And,
well, you know, I heard a thing the other day, and it was saying how a lot of young people now have to be prepared for jobs that don't even exist at the moment, because we're moving into this weird technological
AI kind of
AI. So the jobs that maybe people are trained to may not even exist in 10 years' time. So it's a real, the pressure's on, and everyone needs an outlet. And if this is what we all want to feel like we belong and fit in, and if this is somehow speaking to that's what we need to be thinking about, is why are so many people ready to listen to that message, but not to counter arguments or counter narratives that, you know, that promote equality, that promote fairness for everyone, and let people live their lives how they want to live them.
Maybe it is. I mean, you saying that, James, I'm just sitting here thinking, well, maybe it is because people don't feel like it's a fair society. You know, maybe that's part of it.
Maybe that is a big and there's absolutely valid reasons to feel that way. But I think it's really a shame that it seems to have come to this very much about the individual rather than the collective, rather than our sense of community, rather than how we can help each other, more about how can we help ourselves to become rich, be successful, to drive the fancy cars and sleep with all the people. None of that. I always say to young people, it's all about the process. It's all about the journey, not the destination. And I feel like everyone just wants to get to the destination these days. Everyone just wants to be rich. Everyone wants to be famous, to be an influencer. But I don't know. I just don't know if that is what's making people happy. And I wonder if that's what another, I just wonder if we're not very happy with the way things are at the moment.
I think there's a lot of that, definitely. Okay, right. I think we're out of time, James. That was really, yeah, it was interesting for me. I hope it was interesting for other people who might listen to this. Any final thoughts on this, James?
Only that I hope this is just like the tip of the iceberg. And I think that is, I hope this.
Yeah, me too, Matt. And I think I really hope that the fact that we are now talking about this is, you know, in the same way that's the first stage with tackling it with young people, it's got to be the first part of the solution, right? You know, we've got to start thinking about this. And the game is to win that space back, isn't it? Because like you say, you know, we can't be in a situation where this is the only messaging that's getting out there. And I think, you know, we've got to try and create, create that sort of counter argument or that alternative narrative, you know, within the confines of the realities that young people find themselves in.
Absolutely. And also, and it really does, I think also, it does come, there's a responsibility for older males to really role model the behaviour that we want to see in our young men. And not just, I say, not just young men we're talking about here, but if we're talking about Andrew Tate and whatnot, like I think teachers, male teachers particularly, you know, I think it's and not to put any pressure on their shoulders, but especially, but they're in a really powerful position to lead the way. And anyway,
cool. All right, we're out of time. All right, cheers, James.
Thank you, Mark.
Right, and yeah, I'll speak to you.
Got me on. I'm starting because I could talk about this for ages now. You got me going now.
Well, that's it, mate. I mean, there's a lot to it, isn't there? But yeah, thanks for your time, mate. And catch up.
Take it easy, Matt. Take care. Bye bye.